Hey, welcome back. Today I'm talking with Ernie Lee, the 2016 Georgia Teacher of the Year. He currently teaches at Windsor Forest High School in Savannah, Georgia. He also was a lawyer for over 20 years before becoming a teacher. We've got some great stuff we're talking about today. Wait till you hear what his ideal classroom would look like. And also, wait till you hear him talk a little bit about how he gets kids hooked on his lessons in history.
They're not here for us. We're here for them. That's what it's about. Kids.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is all about assisting classroom teachers and school administrators to overcome the many walls or barriers that kids face. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is focused on helping you help kids achieve their dreams. As a note, I hope that you will stop by Stitcher or iTunes and leave me a star rating and a comment. That helps the show get noticed by more people. Thanks for listening and joining me week after week.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, today I'm talking with Ernie Lee, the 2016 Georgia Teacher of the Year. Mr. Lee currently teaches at Windsor Forest High School in Savannah, Georgia. Ernie was a lawyer for over 20 years before becoming a school teacher. He also worked as an instructor for the Georgia Departments of Revenue and Human Resources and the Technical College System of Georgia, where he operated a mobile technology training lab, developed learning protocols and curriculum, and trained newly hired manufacturing plant employees for new technology positions. In 2010, he started as a full-time substitute teacher. After his time as a substitute, Mr. Lee began his educational career as a special education inclusion teacher, then moved to teaching International Baccalaureate History, U.S. Government, and Civics. As Georgia Teacher of the Year, Mr. Lee has been speaking as an advocate for public education throughout Georgia. Say hi, Ernie.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Doing great. Appreciate you spending time with us and being here, and because I know you've had one heck of a schedule this year in as Georgia Teacher of the Year for 2016. So I appreciate you spending some time with Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here.
Well, thanks for joining me today, and I'd like to get us started by asking you, what inspired you to leave law and become a high school teacher?
Well, I was working in-house at a major university, and I decided to leave this nice paying cushy job to go back into private practice. And in my brilliance, I got into real estate in about 2006, just before the big meltdown. Well, it was kind of funny. During this time, I took a series of jobs, and actually, I was fired from a job. I have never been fired from a job in my life. But it was a time where a lot of stuff was going on in my life. My mother was diagnosed with cancer. My law office was really in a shambles. I filed for bankruptcy. I blew the engine in my car.
Oh my gosh.
Had no money to get it repaired. So basically I lost my car. I put my 18-year-old dog down, because she was pretty sick. Oh. And it was a time for intense self-reflection, to say the least. But a question kept coming up over and over again, specifically, what had I done to make a difference in the lives of others and within my community? I liked being a lawyer, but I really wanted to do something more. And so along those lines, a friend of mine reminded me that I always said when I retired, I was going to teach school. And, you know, I had some wonderful teachers in school, and I knew the ones that really wanted to be there and we're good teachers, and so I wanted to be one of those teachers. But first, I was going to become a wealthy lawyer, make $1 million, and retire at 50 and teach school. Well, obviously, that did not happen. And so anyway, at 50, I decided that it was time to make a change, and so I decided to become a teacher.
Excellent. Excellent. I appreciate you sharing that. You had a lot of things getting your attention at one time, didn't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a trying time, but you know, it really allowed me to make a change when normally I wouldn't have been able to do it.
Gotcha.
So it was a good thing.
Gotcha. Along the pathway, of course, it doesn't just make an easy journey to go from law into the classroom. Instead, you become a substitute teacher along the way. And I'd like to kind of delve there for a few minutes because, you know, as a former substitute teacher, I had been a history teacher, graduated from a University of Florida, and I moved to Georgia and found out that to the metro area of Atlanta and found out that nobody knew me. And it might take me a while to get that first history job. And so I became a substitute. So what I'd like to do is, how did that experience impact you as a classroom teacher?
You know, it's really a good question. And you know what it's like to have to go in and substitute.
Yes.
The same friend that really challenged me to remind me that I wanted to teach, she had been a recruiter for the school district. And now she was an assistant principal. And so she really suggested that I attempt to substitute to see if I even liked it before I went ahead and you know, paid for certifications or got more schooling. And that was really eye-opening. The best way to tell you what it was like was I have a couple of stories that when I was first substituting and it really helped me realize that I probably could be a teacher. One day I was assigned an early childhood education class. And of course, being a lawyer, I knew nothing about early childhood education, but you know, I there were two things that were important for a substitute. Number one, get a roll sheet. That's the most important thing. And number two, try to follow the lesson plan. But the most important thing was probably getting the roll sheet. So, you know, so I went into this class and I was able to call roll. And it was mostly 10th grade girls, but they were working. They were talking. They were loud, but they were working. And, you know, this is a success for a sub. And about halfway through the class, I hear somebody say, "Mr. Lee, pay attention to me." And I looked up and there was one of my students smiling. And I said, "Yes, ma'am, what can I do for you?" And she proceeded to tell me that she had written a rap about me and wanted me to hear it. And, you know, yeah, I was like, I've never had a rap written about me. I really wanted to hear it. So I kind of shushed the class down and asked her to go ahead. And she went into this really funny, creative rap about me being a substitute, me wearing a bow tie and wearing glasses. And it was really funny. And so I applauded her and I got the rest of the class to applaud her. And, you know, it was a success as a substitute teacher. So as we went on, you know, we finished out the day. I said, you know, y'all need to get back and finish this work or I'm going to get in trouble. We've had our playtime. And they did. And it was really successful. Well, 2 weeks later, I'm at the same school. It's a 10th grade English class again, 10th grade. And I walk into the class and they are off the chain. I mean, I couldn't call roll. They were, you know, I couldn't get them to sit down. I couldn't get them to be quiet. And I'm thinking, well, so much for being a teacher because I'll never get called back because I don't get a roll sheet. But all of a sudden, out of the back of the room came this booming voice that said, "Y'all sit down and shut up. Mr. Lee is trying to talk. I want to hear what he has to say." And lo and behold, it's the girl that wrote the rap about me.
Neat.
And, I mean, it was incredible. I mean, it kind of gives me goosebumps to think about it. And immediately everybody sat down and got quiet. And then she said, "Go on, Mr. Lee, I got your back." And I thought long and hard about that. And what I learned that day was, you know, I could have been hardcore and told her earlier that, you know, this is childhood education. This is not music. You need to do your rap in music. You know, but the truth was I'd never had a rap written about me and I really wanted to hear it. And you know, I mean, so taking maybe 90 seconds, you know, maybe 2 minutes out of a 90-minute class, we had some fun. And I connected with that student. And 2 weeks later, she really saved me. And that day I learned a lot about really respecting my students, building relationships with them, talking with them. And it really helped me realize that I really could be a teacher, that I could connect and, you know, I could just be there with them. And that has really served me well since I've been teaching. So, I mean, it makes me feel good.
That's awesome. You know, it's funny because my very first substitute job was in a graphic arts class, and he left a note saying, don't let him touch the machines, and good luck.
And, oh, great.
Yeah. My second one was in a drama class, and I'll never forget that one also, because the second one, the assignment that was left was all of about, maybe 5 minutes, and kids were finished, and I gathered them around, and I discovered that kids like to hear stories. I suddenly developed a stand-up comedian routine.
Right.
You had to figure out how to find your stick, and it was just kind of funny. That's one of the things that I think substituting for me taught me how to be very flexible in trying to figure out how to reach, how to get the kids' focus and attention and so forth. And I tell that story to tell this one, which is one time I was in a seventh grade math class, which I'm a history teacher. I was I got a couple degrees in history, and the math thing was not my thing. And I'm going to that class. There were no lessons left behind, no notes whatsoever. And it happened to be in an area where they had windows. It was an older building that had nice windows right there near bushes. And a little chameleon lizard had crawled through the window. And I put that sucker on my shoulder, and he stayed there.
Oh, wow.
And wouldn't you know that the seventh graders were fascinated by my ability to, lizard whisper or something.
Well, it's whatever it takes, to get the lesson done. But I agree. It's you learn a lot about yourself when you're teaching, and you learn how to connect with kids. And I think that's very important.
It is. That's an amazing. It's just something that, in trying to work with educators, I think something they have to recognize is that you do have to pay particular attention to that. You need to create some sort of connection with the kids.
Absolutely.
Yeah, one of the things I'd like to get you to talk about is I've heard you say that you stand at your door and greet all of your students by name, and that you ask them questions and practice active listening. Why do you do this, and what do you mean by active listening?
That's a good question. As educators, as teachers, we are supposed to stand at our doors before each class and, to kind of monitor the hallways and kind of see what's happening. But I take it probably a little extra step further. When a student walks down the hallway and they have, orange athletic shoes, I'm going to say, man, those are awesome shoes. I could see you coming a mile away. And the student will just grin because, I've singled them out for something very positive. So I'll talk to students as they're walking down the hall. But when they come into my class, I call them by name. I ask them questions. And it's amazing what I can find out from them. I call it my survival tool because most of the time I can tell if they're ready for class or they're not. If they've done their homework or they haven't. But I just really pay attention to them. And, if a young girl has done something new to her hair, I am going to compliment her on it.
Nice.
Teenagers, they have this thing about self-esteem. And if I can build it up, they're going to feel good about themselves, and they're going to feel good about being in my class. But if I see a student is sleepy or I think they're sleepy, I'll just point blank ask them, did you not get enough sleep? What's going on? And when I say active listening, I really stop and wait for an answer. They know they just can't, blow by me, because I will call them back out and I say, no, we're talking. And so, I respect my kids and they respect me back. But, I'll find out things like I had a 10th grader who was telling me that, his father had lost his job or had gone to jail or something. And this kid's working a full-time job and he had to close, at the restaurant the night before and didn't get home until 1 o'clock. Once I know that about a kid, I may give him a pass for that day. I'm going to circle back around and talk to him, but, I may give him a pass, if they've had a late night. They can't use that every day, but, you just got to know what's going on with them. If a kid's in a really good mood, I know I can kind of pick on them or put them in the hot seat, about what we're talking about. So it's really getting to know them and, listening to what they say and also what they don't say, kind of, listening in between the lines. And if I can do that, I'm building up trust very quick with them. They know that I care about them, that I want to know how they're doing because I've got to know them to be able to teach them. But, And I've had students come back that have told me that they really did appreciate that because they knew that I cared about them. And then it gets out to other kids, and I'll get shout outs going down the hallway from kids that I don't even know, but their friends have talked to their friends about me.
Yes.
And, you know, they want to get into my class or whatever. And that makes you feel good that you're doing something right.
That's awesome. That's most definitely. And we've already talked about a little bit about why it's important to connect with students. But I got to go back to something that you said just a minute ago, because you talked about using their names. Can you just go into a little bit more about why that's important for, you know, for any new teacher or a pre-service teacher who might just want some encouragement about learning their names?
You know, everybody likes to be recognized, and I've got some students with some names that are very hard to pronounce. As a matter of fact, I had a senior last year. I was calling names at graduation, and in practice, she told me that I had been calling her name wrong for 2 years, and I felt awful. And I said, "Why didn't you tell me?" She said, "Well, I didn't want to hurt your feelings." I said, "But it's your name. That's so important. It's got to be right." So I do call them by name, and if it's wrong, they're going to correct me. But people like to hear their name, and it helps me learn students. But it's important because it's special. And also, no kid goes unnoticed or it goes invisible in my class because, you know, I'm kind of like a shepherd. You know, during that time, you know, they're my sheep or they're my baby bear cubs or whatever you want to call it. And I am really their protector. I'm going to help guide them and steer them and do what they need to do. So I think hearing their name knows that I know who they are. And it just, I don't know, it seems to work.
That is so awesome. And I love that description, that baby bear cubs or whatever you want to think about it. And I think sometimes just, you know, it's so important for an adult who's in the classroom has to understand that there's a difference between teaching in the post-secondary world and teaching with kids. And one of them is that you're trying to build capacity. In some cases, you're simply trying to build capacity to feel good about being at school.
Absolutely. You know, these kids spend more time in school, waking hours at school, than they do at home. And, you know, it's important to make them feel comfortable. And, you know, the sad thing is we've got a lot of kids that don't come from great homes or good family lives. And my smile may be the only smile that they get all day. And so I take that as a very serious charge. And I want them to know that it's safe. You know, it's okay to make mistakes because, you know, we're going to work on that. But it's like they've got to feel good about themselves and feel good about what they're doing. And it's, you know, in a way, it's teaching some of the soft skills that a lot of students may not have or may not get from parents or from whoever. You know, I say yes, ma'am, and no, sir, to all of my students. And then, of course, they in turn say the same thing to me. Or if they come to borrow a pencil, I'll hold it and I'll say, "Well, what's the magic word?" And they'll look at me like, "What?" I said, "What's the magic word?" And they'll say, "Hocus pocus." And I say, "No, that's not right. You don't get the pencil." And then they'll look at me and they'll say, "Please." And I said, "Yes, that's the magic word. You get a pencil." But it's little things like that, little life lessons that, you know, I grew up with that some of these kids don't get. But I do it in a fun way. So, you know, it's not intimidating. It's really kind of building them up. And that's a good way to live.
It really is. That's awesome. And I love what you're just talking about there, because too often, you know, adults just accept what a kid says. And instead of actually trying to make that lesson, which is, you got to know there's a magic word to make this work this way now. And, you know, and you have fun with it where it's not a, you know, it's not a pain, but at the same time, you know, I want you to do that. And that's an important, you know, life skill that you need to have, but you're not lecturing them about it. You're like, "Okay, you need the pencil? There's a word."
that's right. What's the magic word? And then the other thing is that the other students are watching.
Right.
And they're seeing what their friend is doing, and they're going to remember when they come back up. And, you know, I was a co-teacher for several years doing special ed, and I saw a lot of teachers that, you know, if a kid doesn't have a pencil, tough. And it's like, you know, don't, you know, a kid doesn't have a pencil, fine. You know, I will buy a gross of pencils and give them out. I would much rather have the kid get it. And a lot of times the kid will come back and will say, well, bring the pencil back to me. And when that happens, I really honor the kid and I say, oh, thank you. I really appreciate it. And then I'll ask, do you need this for your next class? And they may say yes or no. And if they say yes, I'll say, look, it's my gift to you. I'm glad you got it. And we'll see you tomorrow. And so I'm not making them feel bad about not having a supply, because there's lots of reasons why they don't. And yeah, I may get suckered by a few, but overall, I think it's appreciated because I'm not putting them down. You know, putting people down is not a way to educate. You know, you got to build them up.
You're so exactly right. It is so much in our see what I did there, right? It's so much in our culture and society that people just think of it naturally, but they don't understand from the other side what it feels like if, you know, there are those put downs going on, because usually a lot of times somebody might be laughing on the outside, but that's not necessarily what's going on the inside.
Right. And, exactly.
And when that happens like that, that can create some serious issues.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and I just love what you're talking about there, because so many times in their lives, it's just such, you know, it's put down after put down after put down, and to have somebody who's is more a positive, you know, this all is good type of influence on them is just, you know, what a kid needs to get them through the day. Okay, one of the things I want to do now is I want to shift and let's talk teaching. And I'd just like to start with, do you have a favorite strategy to get the kids engaged in the classroom content? You know, that thing that hooks or just sucks them into what, you know, your talk for the day.
Well, you know, there's a couple of things I'll do, and it depends on what we're doing that day. You know, being a history teacher, and you've been a history teacher, you know what that's like. I tell a lot of stories, and I will start with a good story and then get it up to a real climax point and then stop. I'll smile and I'll ask them to guess what happens next, or I may tell them to go find out what happens next. And I get, oh, Mr. Lee, don't do that to us. But each time they will flip open their books or open their computers or their smartphones and start looking for it. I also show a lot of video, because if, you know, they're just used to seeing a lot of visuals. And I'll stop the tape or the DVD, and then I'll ask them again, what happens next? And then we'll talk about it. And then I'll go ahead and show the rest of it and then stop and say, okay, what happened? What would you have done differently? Or it's like, what do you think the teenagers at this particular time, how they would react? But I try to get them into it, to get them hooked, to think about how they would react. Because I wanted to start building up their thinking process and being able to evaluate it. I'll ask about ethical considerations, anything to get them involved and interesting. Now, the other thing I'll do is if they're not paying attention, and say when I'm giving a short lecture, I'll say a fact that is obviously so totally wrong to see who catches it. And or I'll tell a really bad joke to see who's listening. And, you know, so they know I'm going to throw something in, so they've got to be listening. But the other thing that, and this is probably some more of those soft skills, I tell them at the beginning of the year that if they're the first one to find a mistake, either in a presentation that we're making or something I hand out, if they're the first one to bring it to my attention, they'll get, you know, a prize or extra credit or something. And, you know, they will look. But what this does is, I model behavior that shows them it's okay to make a mistake. And when I make the mistake or they find it, I immediately thank them for it. And I'm very sincere about this. You mean, my ego's not on the line, but I thank them for doing it. I will immediately fix it. Like if it's on a PowerPoint, I'll immediately fix it. I'll thank them and then we'll move on. And I guess what I'm modeling there is that it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to get critique. And the incredible thing about it is that when they're working in small groups and one of their group makes a mistake, they say, it's okay. And then they learn from it and they go on. So, you know, that's a lot of what I try to do, is just to try to get them involved in it, get them hooked in it, and just, you know, to treat each other well, because I'm treating, you know, I'm treating them good. I want them to treat their other student or their other students good as well. And sometimes you got to model that behavior.
That's awesome. You know, it's funny because I like to tell people that, you know, some of our colleagues in other subjects like to think they got it bad. But I'm like, wait a second, man. We're history, all right? The kids come, like, predisposed to come in and go, do we have to memorize this? Are you going to make us memorize dates? You know, it's like the first thing out of their mouth. So you got to figure out how to come over that. You know, and it's like, that's what's cool. That's why I want to ask you about the hook thing, because that's one of the things I learned is, you know, figuring out how to suck them into it, because history's fun, man.
Oh, history's amazing. And a lot of the kids will say, you know, I never liked history until I had your class. And I take that as a compliment, but I put it back on them. I said, you did all the work. You were the one that were engaged. And you always will get the best out of it if you really put the effort out.
That's awesome. One of the things I want to ask you about in teaching is this. I'm a big believer that as you teach, teaching is experiential, which means that you're going to make mistakes and some things are going to work out right. And you learn from that, which means that you're going to end up with this, your tool bag or bag of tricks that you're going to end up with. And what ends up happening is that over time you develop different types of ideas to try this or try that, depending on the you know, the makeup of the class or the individual, to try and help them get it. And
Right. And
what I wanted to get you to talk about is, do you have any particular tools that you like to help kids get it? You know, that light bulb to go on for them to go, hey, I got you now. I understand where you're going with this.
Yeah, you know, that's an excellent question. I think humor. I don't ever take myself too seriously. So I try to put a lot of humor in the class. I'll model behavior. I'll model what it looks like to do it and then practice. I know to take it seriously when needed, and they know the same thing. But also it's okay to have a good time in school. you know, it's important. I'm trying to get them ready to go into college and to do well. But we need to have fun along the way. And so, you know, it's okay to guess, but also we got to fact check as well. So I think, you know, those are some things that I really try to use. But I also know that if they trust me, they will go with me. And what I mean by that is I'm going to make it tough, but not too tough that they can't do it. So in other words, I'm going to make them work for it. But I'm also going to reward them for it. So, I mean, it's a process. I teach an IB history class, and it's a great class because I have the kids for 2 years.
Oh, nice.
And I really have seen them develop. You know, after that first year, they come back, and I really see them get down and doing some excellent work. And it's, you know, I'm in it with them. You know, I don't ever ask them to do anything that I haven't done or I wouldn't do. And most of the time I'm doing it with them. So, you know, they know that that they can count on me.
That's excellent. Simply that concept right there of you hit one of the nails on the head where you're just talking about the idea that this is, you know, exciting. This is, you know, history is can be fun. And it's all about, you know, getting them to think a little differently and see the world a little differently. And that, what a cool thing when you see a kid make those changes like that.
Well, and I've been able, I'm in Savannah, and the Georgia Historical Society Research Library is here. And I always try to take them at the end of their junior year to the library, and we pull out artifacts and we look at stuff, and I, you know, I get real excited about it. But, you know, I'm showing them that history very much is alive.
Yes.
You know, by reading journals and diaries and things like that, and to see artifacts that make it real. That's another reason why I show a lot of videos. I don't want them just to imagine a World War I trench, but let to see what it looks like. You know, hear from soldiers that were in it. And it kind of makes it come alive. And I think once you do that, it becomes real to them, and then you've got them hooked again.
So awesome. So awesome. Love it. That just that idea of sucking them into it and being in a city like Savannah, that's a great place for a historian. That's
Oh, this is a great history town. It really is.
Most definitely. Well, let's kind of transition a little bit to the classroom itself. If money were not an issue, what would your ideal classroom look like?
Oh, good question. You've got great questions.
Thanks.
You know, I think number one, all of my students would have a PC to use at home and at school, like a 1-to-1, not a 1-to-3, but, you know, 1-to-1. I would have a work area set up with tables for group work. I think group work's important, but also to have you know, individual work areas as well. You know, when somebody needs privacy or needs, you know, quiet time, they need that. I would love to have a room where we could spread out and rearrange when needed, you know, to work on stuff. I do a mock trial in my government class. And so we set it up as a classroom, or I'll do some other type of curriculum where, you know, we're presenting, not plays, but we're presenting ideas. So, you know, we need to be flexible. The other thing is really comfortable chairs in the round. So, you know, we can sit and discuss, and everybody's a part of it. You can't hide behind somebody, but everybody is in that circle. Of course, I'd love a smart board with, you know, historic maps and video on demand kind of stuff that we can actually go and see it. Good lighting. I hate fluorescent lights. Of course, that's what's in all schools. Natural lighting, but a way to dim the light so we can watch the video. Lots of color. Let's see, a room that's welcoming and warm. And, you know, make students want to be there, you know, not want to leave. You, right. You got to shoo them out. I think if you've got that, you've got an environment for learning that kids will really want to be in.
That's excellent. I actually can see the room you're talking about. That's I love it. Inviting to the kids and is just so important. And too many people don't understand that is an important aspect of it. They got to feel not only wanted in there by the adult who's in there, but also that environment that helps them, you know, want to be part of the experience of what's going to happen in this classroom.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm a teacher, but I'm really more like a facilitator.
Love it.
Because if I can get it, you know, student driven, and that's what we should be doing anyway. You know, we've got to differentiate instruction, but, you know, let the student have a say so in of what they're going to do, because then they're really going to buy into it more. But yeah, make it inviting.
Love it. Let me ask you this. Do you have a favorite memory from teaching?
You know, I do. And it's something that happened last year. And I had a student who was always late for class. And we're talking not 5 minutes, but we're talking 25 minutes. And he would come in and he would disrupt the class. And it really, you know, got on my nerves. Every time he would come in, I would have to stop the class and get him organized and give him stuff. He knew it irritated me, and he was later and later every day. And he always had a good excuse. And so one day, you know, the bell sounds and I'm still out in the hallway getting ready to close the door, and I see him coming down the hall, and he's in no particular hurry. But I stand and I wait for him with a big smile. And when he gets there, I, you know, throw up my hand and I say, "Man, give me a high five. You are almost on time." And celebrate, you know. And he looks at me like I'm crazy. But I say, "You know, I'm glad you're here. Do you need a book?" And he starts to give me an excuse, and I cut him off and I say, no, I'm not getting on to you. Man, I'm glad you're here. I've got a book you can borrow. Would you like to borrow it?" And he says, "Yes." I say, "Okay, great. Come on in. You got paper?" No, he didn't have paper. Again, started to give me an excuse. And I said, no, I'm not angry with you. I'm just glad you're here. Come on, I've got paper and pencil for you. We can start class now. You're on time." And the next day he comes on time. And, you know, he starts to come to class every day on time. And now he's not a great student. He still cheats. He still gets caught. But, you know, I learned that, you know, he'd copied another student's paper, and I pulled him aside out of, you know, where nobody else could hear me. And I said, "Look, man, you know, when you copy somebody else's paper, all you're doing is practicing your handwriting." And I said, "Baba, you got beautiful penmanship." You know, and he really did. And I said, "Look, you have fooled every teacher in this school but me. I know you're smart. I know you can do this work. Would you take this paper and redo it?" And he looked at me and said, "Yes, I will." You know, and he took it back and turned it in the next day. And then, I don't know, things really started to change. He was on time. He was coming to class every day that he wasn't suspended, and he was suspended a lot. But when he was in-school suspension, I would, you know, take a book down to him and whatever we were working on and sit and talk with him for a few minutes to make sure that he understood what the assignment was. And I always got him, you know, the assignments back in from him. which was pretty powerful. I mean, you know, this was a kid who was 17. He was marked as a ninth grader, so he didn't have a whole lot of credits. But I asked him one day what were his plans when he graduated. And again, he looked at me like I was crazy. But he said, "Why do you care?" And I said, "I care a great deal." I said, "You got to understand, you know, I came into teaching later, and teaching is so important to me. I've had a good life, and I want you to have a good life. And the way to do that is to get an education. And my job is to do everything within my power to get you to pass my class. And your job, and you do have a job, is to pass my class. And second to it, I've got to do everything I can do to get you to graduate, and your job is to graduate. So yes, I will celebrate you when you walk across that stage. I'll be your biggest cheering section." And then he started disciplining the class for me. He was on time every day, and he'd say, "Look, y'all better sit down. Mr. Lee's getting that look about him." And I would smile and say, "Thank you. I'll discipline the class. Thank you. I really appreciate it." But the other thing about this student is he had an electronic monitoring bracelet, and he, he'd been in trouble, but the secretary started calling me on Thursdays for him to come to the office to change the battery. And, you know, I said, "Miss Carrington, you're killing me." I said, "I finally got him coming to class every day on time. You know, can't you call somebody else to do this?" And the secretary cut me off and said, "Mr. Lee, you don't understand. Yours is the only class he goes to regularly."
Wow.
And, you know, I will remember that, because this is a kid who is probably class ran better when he wasn't there. I hate to say that. But, you know, it's like by making a friend out of him, I had a great class. And he, you know, he had some place to be. And even though he didn't go to other classes, he came to my class. And I'll never forget that. I mean, he's a pretty cool kid, and, you know, he had a lot of problems, but, you know, he learned some American government and civics.
Excellent. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing a wonderful story. Just never know with kids. And it's funny what you said about, you know, it's just as much of there's a little bit of a negative aspect of having him in class, but hey, it's good to have him there, right?
You know, we don't get to pick our students. You know, we teach them all. And so, if he's going to be in there, man, let's make it a pleasant experience. And actually, after a while, he was a lot of fun to have in class.
I can imagine. Thank you so much for sharing. Part of your duties as Teacher of the Year is to talk about public education. What message do you deliver to your audiences?
Oh, wow.
I know, I'm asking you to shorten. Can you just put it into one word?
I think it's to be informed.
You almost did it.
To know what's going on in your community. You know, when I'm talking with other teachers, I tell them to vote. Let your representative know what you think. I really believe that free public education is really the cornerstone of our democracy. I think that's really important. When I'm talking to the general public, you know, I remind people that school is not like it is when they were in school. You know, it's vastly different. And, we have different challenges to look at. So don't think school was like it was when you were in school, because it is much different. Whether it's good or bad, it just is different.
That's awesome advice. You are so right about it. It's definitely different.
It is.
The power of that one cell phone in their pockets. Never had that much power before. You can cause trouble on the other side of the school and be sitting in your seat.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, how can the audiences follow up with you if they'd like to?
Well, people are more than welcome to email me, and I've got an email account. It's very easy to remember. It's 2016, T-O-T-Y. So it's 2016 Teacher of the Year, T-O-T-Y, @gmail.com.
Excellent. I'll include that.
Or they can always go to Windsor Forest High School in Savannah, and they can click on a link there. And people are, I welcome people's emails or comments.
Excellent. Thank you. And I'll include those in the show notes so that they can find them easily in that one place with the podcast.
That'd be great.
Well, before we finish, I have two more questions I'd like to ask you. And it goes like, the first one goes like this. If you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers who haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
Oh, that's, you're asking really good questions. The first thing that comes to my mind is do what you love and love what you do, and you'll never work a day in your life. Second, get to know your students and build those good relationships. You know, I've really found it makes classroom management so much easier. You can teach them if you know them. I just think that that's really important. I get accused of getting all the good students, and I do, because after 2 weeks, they are good students because I get to know them. Probably the other important advice is to call parents about good things, because when you just call them about the bad things or the bad behaviors or grades, you know, they're going to associate you with something bad. So if you call them about good things, then they're going to put more trust in you and your judgment. I don't know. I just think teaching is an incredible profession. Another quick story here. When I became a teacher, I was a lawyer, and my father wanted a lawyer for a son. And when I changed careers, you know, he noticed I was really a lot happier. And he said, "Man, you're smiling all the time. You look like you're in a good mood." I said, "Dad, I love teaching." And he said, "Well, I can really tell." And then he started to tell me about a story about a teacher that he had when he was 10 years old. And my dad's family was, you know, grew up during the Depression, and they were just dirt poor. I mean, he's told the story that he never had regular meals until he lied about his age and joined the Navy at 15. And so he was very poor.
Wow.
But this teacher treated him and his brothers, you know, like they were very special. I mean, they were poor kids, but they were very special. And what I'm coming about here is that, you know, he said she made a difference in his life. Well, my dad is 89. And when I thought about that story when I was driving home, that teacher was probably born in the 19th century, in the 1800s. And we're still talking about her in the 21st century.
That's awesome.
Now, that's the power of a good teacher. And, you know, I think that's why I teach, because we can make a difference in people's lives, and we don't know really who all that we're going to be impacting. But I know that we do impact a lot of people.
That's an awesome thought that you just had there about, you know, still talking about her in the 21st century. What an incredible, that tells you impact right there. That's amazing. And that lends me to my last question, which is, do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? And if given the chance to say thank you, who would it be and what would you say?
Well, you know, it's funny because I've had several teachers, but since I'm teaching high school now, I've got to thank my 12th grade humanities teacher. And she was incredible. It was a 2-hour class, and it counted as both as an English and a social studies credit. But Kay Graham was the teacher. And luckily, I've actually been able to contact her on Facebook. And I've told her, I said, how much I appreciated what she did for me and for all of her students. Miss Graham was just one of those really good teachers. And she made us contract for grades. And what I mean by that is, to get an A, we had to make, you know, 90s to 100 on all of our assignments, but we also had to read something like 8 to 10 books a quarter. And we had to go sit down with her and discuss the book.
Nice.
You know, to get a B, we may have to read 7 books or so on. But that year, I fell in love with reading, and I ended up reading something like 45 books that year, my senior year, and it really got me ready for college, you know? And she pushed us, she pulled us, and she got the best out of us. And actually, you know, I've set up my classroom very similar to how she had her classroom set up, you know, in 1977 and 78. She was really special. She made a difference. And great teachers like her really do impact people, because I know she impacted me, and that's what I'm trying to do with my students, have that same positive impact.
Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's inspiring. That's, you know, that's that, you're so right on all those levels in talking about her. So I thank you for sharing that story. Ernie, I can't thank you enough for joining us. Your words of inspiration and your thoughts about the classroom, I think my audience is really going to enjoy listening to you again as they get a chance to here. I wish you the best the rest of this year, and look forward to hearing more adventures from Ernie. And I do have to say, by the way, because nobody can see you, but you do sport the bow tie very nicely, all right?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm known for my bow ties.
Nice. Well, thank you very much, and I wish you the best.
Thank you, Steve.
Take care now, Ernie.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
Hang tight, everyone. I'm going to let go of the wall.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the Heart of Georgia Precinct.